Okay, let's see. It's Sunday. It's 20 March. Does anybody know what 20 March is? Besides 20 March?
Yeah, right.
It is the vernal equinox. It's the first day of spring today. So get out your sunscreen and get on your beach hat, and it's going to be warm water, and it's going to be the coconut trees are going to be coconutting, and here we are. There you go. I'm Charlie Garrett, and this is the CG Report. Where's the beef? That and a lot of other things to go over on today's report. Okay, let's see here. We got some news from Israel today. By the way, did I tell you that it's the vernal equinox, the first day of spring, and we're all going to the beach and going swimming? I don't know about the people up north, but Sarasota. I love this time of the year in Sarasota because all of the flowering trees are starting to flower. If you notice, some of the gold trees are starting right now. And by the end of the week, all of the gold trees are going to be radiant. And then come the jacarandas, the purple trees. Then you get the royal poinsettias. It is such a beautiful time of the year. And then, of course, 8 minutes later, it gets 90,000 degrees and it's 822% humidity. And we do this until October, maybe November, maybe December, and then it cools down again. But I love this time of year. Wow. Okay, let's see here from the Times of Israel. This is a little later last week, but it's an important thing that happened. Hosting Herzog in landmark visit, Erdogan lauds turning point in relations. In remarks to the media, Erdogan said he believed that this historic visit will be a turning point in relations between Turkey and Israel. As I say, each time I read one of these, I don't really trust Erdogan, so we'll just go take it with a grain of salt, but we'll go with it. Let's see here. Strengthening relations with the State of Israel has great value for our country. He noted that the meeting with Herzog included a discussion about events in Ukraine and in the Eastern Mediterranean, and said he believed the coming period will bring new opportunities for both regional and bilateral cooperation. He expressed hope that this important visit, taking place after so long, will provide an opening for future joint opportunities. He went on to call anti-Semitism a crime against humanity, saying that hate crimes continue to take place all over the world, and we will continue to tackle xenophobia, racism, anti-Semitism, and Islamophobia. Speaking after Erdogan, Herzog thanked the Turkish president for the warm welcome and opened his speech by saying in Turkish, "My wife," now this is the Israeli president speaking in Turkish, "my wife and I are very happy to be in Turkey as your guests. This is a very important moment in relations between our countries, and I feel it is a great privilege for us to lay the foundations for the cultivation of friendly relations between our states and our peoples, and to build bridges that are critical for all of us. Our people's relationship is an ancient one with strong historical, religious, and cultural roots. The long line of magnificent Jewish leaders, rabbis, poets, sages, merchants, and entrepreneurs represents only part of the Jewish people's history here in this land, the land of Turkey." So it's a very interesting development that the president of Israel would go there, that they're meeting, that they're saying nice things to each other, etc. Once again, though, I don't really trust Erdogan to stick to his word on anything. So take everything that he says with a grain of salt, but they are trying to work out some bridges right now. We'll just see where that goes. Okay, from the Times of Israel, U.S. House approves $1 billion for Israel's Iron Dome after months-long delay. Okay, this delay should not have happened, but we got a couple of pipsqueaks on the left in Congress that have made everything difficult. And so it's finally been approved. It's gone through the Congress, the Senate. It's gone up to the president, and it's funded now. The money will fund interceptor missiles for the system, many of which were used to defend the country during last year's conflict with Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Hamas fired over 4,300 rockets at Israel in the space of 11 days. 4,300 rockets targeting anybody. It could be civilians. It doesn't matter to them, which is a war crime in any other country of the world, but nothing was done about it for them. Instead, Israel got all the blame for being bombed. Okay, you got in the way of their bombs, and it's not fair that you did that. Okay, Iron Dome reportedly intercepted 90% of those heading to populated areas. It was also used in previous rounds of fighting with Gaza. Okay, from the... You know what? Before we get in the next article, I forgot to do something that I always do. And we're a little off today because the church has had so many sick people and I was talking about them. But we have a visitor today, all the way from McKinney, Texas. It's Marla Wood. It's somebody that I've corresponded with. And I did not know that she was coming into the church today. And so I was completely surprised. But it is wonderful to have you here. And you came on the right day because, like I said, the whole church got sick last week. 92.3% of them are not here. And we brought the regular amount of food that we always bring, plus a little extra because last week we ran short. And so we've got tons of food. So if you get hungry, just walk around the church and go get something to eat and come back and snack. And oh, great day. Anyway, it's wonderful to have you here. Thank you for making the effort. All right. We got from the Times of Israel report. 14 private jets from Russia land in Israel in the last 10 days. Now, this was about 8 days ago, maybe 7 days ago, but these private jets, these Russian billionaires are going to Israel to try to save some of their assets, I guess, in the process of Russia being sanctioned with everything. So they land in Israel in the last 10 days as Israel avoids sanctioning oligarchs. As Israel effectively avoids joining Western sanctions against Russian oligarchs, in the last 10 days, 14 private jets that took off from St. Petersburg landed at Ben-Gurion. Channel 12 reported that an unusual number of rented private jets have reportedly been flying from Russia to Israel since the invasion of Ukraine, a possible indication that some wealthy Russians are looking at ways to slip around sanctions imposed to punish their country for the attack. Okay, this could be something that will get Israel into trouble with in the future as well. I mean, all these little things that don't seem to have any importance actually probably do in future relations with other countries. From the Times of Israel, U.S. official warns Israel, based on what we just saw and some other things that they have done, don't be the last haven for dirty money fueling Putin's war. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland tells Channel 12 that Israel should join the Western world's sanctions against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. You don't want to become the last haven for dirty money that is fueling Putin's wars. Asked whether the U.S. has asked Israel to join the Biden administration's sanctions against Russia, Nuland says, "We are asking, among other things, for every democracy around the world to join us in the financial and export control sanctions that we have put on Putin. We have to squeeze the regime, we squeeze the oligarchs around him, we squeeze its economy. So in that context, we're asking as many countries as we can to join us. We're asking that of Israel as well. As for whether Israel should provide military aid to the Ukraine, Nuland says, that's a sovereign decision for Israel to make. Many, many democracies around the world are stepping out of their comfort zone to supply security and military support to Ukraine. But what's most important from our point of view right now is for Israel to join the financial sanctions." Okay, they don't care what they do with the Ukraine. We just want you to cut off Russia. So anyway, we'll see where that all goes, because it's not the kind of thing you would normally think of being important, but these little things do add up over time, and eventually they become an issue which may affect things in the future. Okay, we got some news about Christianity here, but before I get into our first article, Beth emailed, and she said, "I'm about 200 hours toward my goal of watching every sermon you have online. I just wanted to say thank you for directing viewers this week to Jesus and away from sensationalism." Okay, prophecy updates can often be taken to extremes that are they're just totally false. There's a lot of garbage out there, a lot of videos that get published, and people just believe them even though they have nothing to do with reality. People are into sensationalism. They're into the newest thing, and when it's over, they move on and they want the next newest thing. And you're not going to find that here. You're going to get an analysis of what's going on in the world, and I'm not going to get into sensationalism either here or especially in the sermons. I'm sorry, I don't care if it sells well or not. It is not responsible. So I appreciate her comments very much, and I would encourage you to watch the Superior Word sermons, because that is where you will get proper theology. That is where you will get a closer relationship with the Lord that you're not going to get watching prophecy updates. So there you go. That's my weekly plug for the sermons. Okay, from Just the News, Biden admin appeals to Supreme Court to stop unvaccinated Navy SEAL deployments. Okay, they've already had a challenge that the SEALs, you know, don't get the vaccine and everything, and now they're trying to say you can't be deployed. So they're doing everything they can to destroy Christianity within the U.S. military. Everything possible. The original court filing included 26 Navy SEALs who were challenging the vaccine mandate on religious grounds. Can't have those religious fanatics leading our people into battle. Just can't have it. Okay? Whereas they have been the staple of the leaders of those people since the Navy SEALs began. And all of a sudden, there's this giant anti-Christian rush to crush out everybody that proclaims Christ in the U.S. military. It is vile. It is vulgar. It is disgusting. It is the modus operandi for the left. Okay, from the Epoch Times. Next one. Navy refuses to deploy warship while commander remains unvaccinated. Okay. I'll read it and then I'll talk about it maybe. Maybe you'll get it from the article. U.S. Navy officials have said that a warship, an entire warship that defends the United States of America, cannot be deployed because its commander has refused the COVID-19 vaccine. Once again, a Christian that says, I do not want this, and now an entire warship is staying in docks. That's smart. The service said an East Coast guided missile destroyer is out of commission after a Florida federal judge ruled that the Navy and Marine Corps cannot remove its officer for being unvaccinated against COVID-19. They said you cannot do anything to him, and you also cannot harm his position within the U.S. military in any way, shape, or form. So what do? This. The warship now remains docked in Norfolk, Virginia. It comes after U.S. District Judge Stephen Merriday ruled to bar Secretary of Defense, the complete commie, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, and all other military officials from taking punitive action against the unnamed officer who sought religious exemptions to the military's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Merriday wrote that the Navy's rejection failed to note that the branch has separately granted hundreds of medical exemptions to the COVID-19 vaccine mandate. So they have exemptions, but this guy, he's got an exemption because of a court order, and he can't participate in the U.S. Navy. This makes a lot of sense. This is really smart operations for our military. The Navy officer was told he would be removed from command of his ship if he didn't start a COVID-19 vaccination series. Top military officials determined that the commander's religious beliefs were sincere and that they would be substantially burdened by being forced to get vaccinated, but also claimed that granting the exemption request would have a predictable and detrimental effect on the readiness of you and the sailors who serve alongside you. His religious preferences to not be vaccinated will affect the U.S. Navy so badly that that warship cannot leave port. On February 28th, the Navy asked Merriday for an emergency stay on the preliminary injunction, arguing that the judge's ruling prevents it from removing an officer from billets who the military has deemed unfit for command because of his religious preference to not be vaccinated. The order is an extraordinary intrusion upon the inner workings of the military that presents a direct and, here it is, imminent threat to national security during a global military crisis, and it indefinitely sidelines a Navy warship because he's not vaccinated. An imminent threat to the United States of America. The only imminent threat that we have to the United States of America is the people that are in charge of the U.S. military, including the commander-in-chief. That's the only imminent threat that we have. With respect to Navy commander, the Navy has lost confidence in his ability to lead and will not deploy the warship with him in command. But they can't do any punitive thing to him. They can't make him not do his duties. And so they're just taking a warship out of commission because of this. This is criminal negligence on the part of the United States government. Absolutely. I would say it's treasonous. And you know what we can do with traitors? Okay. That's what we should be doing, is taking them and trying them and putting them in prison where they belong. Some news from the Middle East and Africa today. Now, before I give some news from the Middle East and Africa, I'd like to wish happy birthday to two special ladies. One is named Lisa. She's in Australia. And the other is named Becky, and she's in Colorado. They're wonderful ladies, and this is my hats off to them, or bandanas off to them. Okay, Zero Hedge, Saudis, UAE refused to take Biden's calls to discuss Ukraine's situation and talk to Putin instead. Now, you may have heard some of this, you may not have, and the article goes into some depth, and it's very interesting. First, Brazilian President Bolsonaro declined to condemn the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Then India followed suit as the Modi government attempted to balance its historic ties with Moscow and its strategic partnership with Washington. Now, Saudi and UAE leaders are refusing to take Biden's calls as Biden tries to contain surging oil prices. Now, this was probably late last week. It may have been early this week. It's been a couple days, but it's still relevant to what's going on as far as our administration and how the rest of the world perceives that guy. Okay? The Persian Gulf monarchies have signaled they won't help ease surging oil prices unless Washington supports them in Yemen and elsewhere. There was some expectation of a phone call, but it didn't happen. The UAE's Sheikh Mohammed also ghosted Biden in recent weeks, according to the Middle East officials and U.S. officials. Yet, both Prince Mohammed and Sheikh Mohammed took phone calls from President Putin after declining to speak with Biden. It shows you how absolutely incompetent this man in the White House is. They're completely snubbing him. They also spoke with Ukraine President Zelensky. Biden was able to get through to Prince Mohammed's 86-year-old father. He probably didn't have anybody else to talk to, so he said, yeah, give me the phone, I'll talk to him. However, the UAE's Ministry of Foreign Affairs said the call between Mr. Biden and Sheikh Mohammed would need to be rescheduled. The Saudis have signaled that their relationship with Washington has deteriorated under the Biden administration, and they want more support for their intervention in Yemen's civil war, help with their own civilian nuclear program as Iran moves ahead, and legal immunity for Prince Mohammed in the United States. The Crown Prince faces multiple lawsuits in the U.S., including over the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. Meanwhile, the Emiratis share Saudi concerns about the less than adequate level of engagement by the U.S. regarding recent missile strikes by Iran-backed Houthi militants in Yemen against both the UAE and Saudi Arabia. The two kingdoms are also concerned about the revival of the Iran nuclear deal, which they should be very concerned about, which is in its final stages of negotiations, yet does zero to address their security concerns. For those keeping track, while the West has continued to insist that Russia is isolated, and make no mistake, these sanctions will be immediately crippling, if one considers the population and resources which originate in China, India, Brazil, and the Middle East kingdoms, basically half the world's population, and those who control most of the world's commodities, aren't on board with punishing Putin or easing the situation to the West's benefit. Saudi Arabia and the UAE are the only two major oil producers that can pump millions of more barrels of more oil, a capacity that, if used, could help calm the crude market at a time when American gasoline prices are at high levels. Late last month, Brett McGurk, the National Security Council's Middle East coordinator, and Amos Hochstein, the State Department's energy envoy, flew to Riyadh to try and smooth relations, while McGurk also met with Sheikh Mohammed in Abu Dhabi to hear out their frustrations with America's response to Houthi attacks. Obviously, diplomacy didn't go well. To date, the Saudis and Emiratis have declined to increase oil production and are instead holding to the previously agreed OPEC production roadmap. What's more, their energy alliance with Russia, another top oil producer, has boosted OPEC's global reach while bringing the kingdoms closer to Moscow. Saudi Arabia and the UAE forged deep ties with President Trump, who sided with them in a regional dispute with Qatar, pulled the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal that they had opposed, and made his first trip abroad to Riyadh in 2017 and stood by Prince Mohammed after the killing of Mr. Khashoggi. The rift between Biden and Saudi Arabia's crown princes stretches back to the 2020 presidential election, when Biden vowed to treat the kingdom as a pariah state after a Saudi hit team killed Mr. Khashoggi in 2018 in Istanbul. Biden also released an intel report shortly after taking office, which concluded that the 2018 Istanbul murder of journalist Khashoggi was approved by Prince Mohammed, who is denied knowledge of the plot, despite close associates having been convicted in Saudi court over the journalist's death. Biden also slammed Saudi Arabia over its long war in Yemen and cut off weapons that the Saudis were using to target Houthis. Biden also removed Houthis from a list of global terrorist groups after President Trump had added them. And after Biden was ghosted, White House Psaki confirmed that Biden stood by his view that the Saudis should be treated like a pariah and that their leadership has little redeeming social value. In an interview with The Atlantic, Prince Mohammed said, when asked if Biden misunderstood him, simply, "I do not care," adding that Biden shouldn't have alienated Saudi leaders. "It's up to him to think about the interests of America," he said, adding, "Go for it." So perhaps you don't call the country that could bail you out of an oil crunch a pariah if you might require their assistance. Now, I would probably go a little deeper than this. It might be conspiratorial, but I would say that it is more than probable that they are doing this on purpose. I'm talking about the Biden admin, because you know what's going on with Saudi Arabia now. We talked about it earlier today, and India and China and Russia are all talking about getting rid of the U.S. dollar as the commodity that is used for trading oil. If that happens, and I'll have an article or two about this on the Wednesday report, if that happens, the U.S. dollar will no longer be the monetary system of the world. It will collapse very quickly after that. These people in the White House know this. What they have done is set things up so that they cannot be fixed, so that the U.S. falls, because this has been their goal all along. Everything that they have done, everything that the administration has done, has been to harm our military, to lessen our impact in the world as a whole, and to destroy the foundational underpinnings of our nation. Everything they have done has been that, and I would not be surprised if they set this up in advance so that Saudi Arabia would turn away from America towards China, which is what they're doing, towards Russia, and that America would fall, and that they knew this would happen. That's what I think happened. That may be, like I said, maybe a little conspiratorial on my part, but I can see no other reason why the administration of the United States of America has done everything possible to destroy this nation. Everything they've done, everything has been a bad decision for America. Everything. From the Daily Caller, Saudi Arabia, UAE welcome UK Prime Minister for oil talks after reportedly shunning Biden. So they let him in, but they won't even talk to Biden on the phone. Okay, now something interesting from Mongolia, from The Guardian. This is really cool. Now, this is Inner Mongolia. It's not actually Mongolia proper, but the rest of Mongolia proper had almost nothing worth reporting except COVID. I'm not going to do that. So, Mongolian rodent fells tall grass to foil predators. Now, rodents don't eat grass, okay? But they figured something out. A little wisdom in those brains from God. A rodent that lives on the plains of Inner Mongolia fells tall grasses so that it can scan the skies for flying predators. Brant's voles is the type of rodent. It's called Brant's voles. Cut tall bunch grass when shrikes, which are a type of bird, they're known as butcher birds, were nearby. The voles do not eat the bunch grass, but were observed to manage it as a means of self-preservation. An example of ecosystem engineering. These are rats. Ecosystem engineering. When shrikes were present, the voles dramatically decreased the volume of bunch grass. Now, that seems counterintuitive because now they can be seen. No, this led to fewer visits from shrikes, which apparently recognize cut grass areas as poor hunting grounds. An activity like this is costly for the voles in terms of energy, so cutting the grass must significantly improve their chances of survival. Rats. That's amazing. It's like the monarch butterflies that leave, you know, way up in the north, and they fly all the way down. They die on the way. The next generation ends up in Mexico, in one valley of Mexico. There they breed, they fly back, die halfway, and the next generation goes back, and they do this year after year, never having been to this place, and they know exactly where to go to. It's unbelievable what God has put into little insects, little bird brains, little rat brains. What a great God we serve. Okay, Daniel prophesied that technology would increase in the end times. What's up with that? From Zero Hedge. Okay, we're going through a war right now with Ukraine and Russia. Okay, and this is not new technology, but I'm going to explain to you the technology of the main fighting weapon that the Ukrainians have been using. One thing that comes up every single day when I turn on YouTube while Hideko is cooking and doing her thing and I'm sitting there waiting for dinner, I turn on YouTube and things will come up and I'll click on them. I always pick real short ones because I never know when she's going to say, okay, dinner's ready, and that's more important than whatever's on TV. But I click through, and the past couple days, videos from the Ukraine have been coming up. 1 and 2 minute videos of them destroying Russian tanks. It's very interesting things. One of them was way cool. They've got all these manned personnel carriers and tanks and stuff. They have these almost 50 caliber weapons, but they're the Russian specs, whatever. Really big guns. And the Ukrainians have taken these guns off, and they've got lots and lots of them, and they got miles of ammunition because they just left these vehicles and left, the Russians. So they got all this ammunition, they've got these giant things, and a car shop in the Ukraine has specialists. You know, they cut metal, they know how to do things, and so they took one of these things. It's this big thing that's mounted on a APC, we'll say. They've taken, they've cut it so that it can be carried by a guy. This is a really big, powerful gun that a guy can now carry, and they carry it around, and they had to cut it, and they had to do certain things to it, and they've got tons of ammunition. These people are not laying down and taking it quietly. These are some very intelligent people, and in a car shop, they're building these. First time ever. You know, they say war is the mother of invention. This is proven true. These guys are inventing all kinds of things that will now become standard. Russians are probably going to see that and say, hey, we could put that in our arsenal. You know, these big, whatever. Okay, the Javelin is the thing that the Ukrainians have been using the most to destroy the Russians. And I thought I'd tell you how Javelins work. Okay, the Javelin is wrecking Putin's army. Here's how the anti-tank weapons work. Since the start of Putin's invasion of Ukraine, Ukrainian freedom fighters have extensively utilized the American-made weapon system to rain destruction down upon the Russian military's armored vehicles. Ukraine's defense ministry estimates that 102 tanks and 536 armored vehicles had been destroyed as of February 26. It's now March 20th, so that was a month ago. I went online this week, and here's what I found. The most recent was still about a week old, but this is the most recent as of a little over a week ago. 400 tanks, as well as 60 tanker trucks and 1,165 armored vehicles as of 3/18. That was 2 days ago, but the dating of the article went back another 4 or 5 days, okay? So the Javelin likely factored heavily into that rousing combat success. This weapon, and you can watch right online, just type in Ukrainian use of Javelin, and you can watch how it works. It's great to watch, okay? The Javelin likely figured heavily into that rousing combat success. This weapon allows a single soldier to target and destroy even the most heavily armored main battle tank with an almost guaranteed kill rate at great range and with minimal risk. So how does it work? Laypersons might be envisioning a bazooka-like operation, but anti-tank weapons have evolved considerably since that quintessential rocket launcher was deployed in World War II. With the Javelin, a soldier using the portable, reusable command launch unit looks through an infrared sight to locate a target up to an incredible 2.5 miles away. When the user spots a target, he operates a cursor to set a square around it, almost like cropping an image. This is then sent to the onboard guidance computer on the missile itself, which has a sophisticated algorithmic tracking system coupled with an infrared imaging device. When the missile locks onto the target, the operator can launch the self-guided weapon. That's it. You shoot, and then it just goes and does its own thing, and quickly relocate or reload to fire another missile at a different target. The first motor produces enough thrust to launch the missile out of the tube and a safe distance away, but is completely burned before the nozzle left the tube, leaving no exhaust to hit the operator. Very important, you don't want to have your face burned off by this. So they have a first motor. The flight motor then ignites to propel the missile along its attack path. So motor, get out of the tube. Second motor takes off to take it to its attack path, okay? A second innovation of the Javelin is that it strikes from above. The missile rises high into the air, up to 490 feet, then blasts down on its target from a steep angle, striking the top of an armored vehicle or tank where the armor is typically weakest. Russian tanks are not helpless against the Javelin. Most are equipped with explosive reactive armor. I've talked about that about a year ago. It sees a missile coming in and it explodes outward and it causes the missile coming in to explode. I don't know if you remember that, but I talked about that about a year ago. When struck by a penetrating weapon like a missile, the armor detonates, blasting a metal plate outwards to damage the missile's penetrator and prevent it from piercing the tank's main armor. The Javelin overcomes this by having tandem warheads, one to deal with the reactive armor plate and the second to impact the tank's armor itself. So it overcomes their defense. It's wonderful. Modern Russian tanks are also equipped with a radar system called Arena, which detects incoming missiles and automatically fires a wide burst of projectiles to destroy or redirect them. But here, again, the Javelin reigns supreme. The Javelin can defeat Arena while in a top attack mode due to the missile descending from too steep an angle for the system to engage properly. Ukraine had been shipped roughly 77 launchers and 740 missiles before Putin invaded. Many, many more of each are now on the way, which they have arrived. That was, like I said, a while ago, courtesy of the U.S. and European allies. So this is a great missile, and that is how it works. They figured out how Russia would defend against it, and then they said, we're going to defend against that, and we're also going to defend against their secondary defenses. Marvelous. Okay, I know it's war and people died, but it's still interesting to see how these things develop. Okay, it's a dangerous world, especially if you're a tank commander in the Russian army right now, including the inevitable plagues the Book of Revelation prophesies of. Let's see how that's going. Okay, from Bloomberg, Americans may have to say goodbye to steak and burgers as beef costs rise. Remember the beginning? Where's the beef? Well, now you know where the beef is. Americans could be cutting steaks and burgers from their diets as inflation soars, if beef packer profit margins are any indication. Processors like Tyson Foods, Inc. and JBS USA are making the least amount of money per head of cattle slaughtered in more than 2 years. That's a sign that demand for the luxury meat is flagging. Consumers more likely splurge on steaks and chops when the stock market is up. That's in doubt as Russia's invasion of Ukraine pressures markets. Meat prices are part of what's behind soaring inflation. That's the worst in 4 decades, and consumers are getting sticker shock. On the demand side, the concern is discretionary spending. Will consumers look to cheaper proteins, or will they skip proteins? Estimated profit margins for beef packers fell to $102.45 per head. That's around the lowest since before the coronavirus pandemic began in early 2020. During the outbreak, workers inside slaughterhouses caught the virus and forced plants to close, limiting the amount of beef available and sending prices soaring to record highs. Packer margins peaked at $1,009.30 per head in May 2020, adding to criticism of pandemic profiteering by meat companies. The balance is starting to shift as the war is also raising prices for grains, including wheat, hitting a record. Elevated feed prices will prompt livestock farmers to scale back herds, hitting profits for slaughterhouses. Everything is bad in this market right now, and beef could go out of sight, is what they're trying to tell you, without reading the whole article. Epic Times. Genetically modified mosquitoes are set to be released in California and Florida. We had it last year. They're doing it again. But this is the first time in California, which really surprises me because there are a bunch of lefties out there, and I'm surprised they're even allowing it. But we've got genetically modified mosquitoes set to be released in California and Florida. Millions of genetically modified mosquitoes are set to be released in these states in an effort to reduce the number of real disease-carrying invasive mosquitoes. The EPA approved use of the genetically engineered insects in pilot projects in specific districts across both states. Well, they've approved a lot of other things lately that have not really been that good, and they've denied a lot of things that have been really good. So I'm not really sure I'd be trusting the FDA at this point in time.
Love bugs came from?
No, you'll have to do a look up on there, but there's a lot of myths about the love bugs. There's some truths about them, but there's some myths about them. And I do not believe that that's the case. Okay, I could be wrong, but I do believe it's not the case. Okay, Oxitec's new tech consists of genetically modified male mosquitoes, which do not bite, that will be released into the wild where they are expected to mate with females, which do bite. In mating with them, they will pass on a lethal gene that will effectively ensure that offspring die before reaching maturity. EPA officials approved two projects, one with the Delta Mosquito and Vector Control District in California, and one with the Florida Keys Mosquito Control District. The Florida pilot project will be a continuation of Oxitec's partnership with the Florida District after its pilot project in the Keys in 2021, which we talked about last year. Okay, there are always unintended consequences for things like this. Always. And I'm just waiting to see. Last year, nothing happened that I know of. I don't think anybody had hands growing out of their children's head or anything. But I do expect that in the days ahead, we're going to see negative things occur because of this. Because you don't just go in there and manipulate the environment and find out that everything is peachy, okay? I just don't think that's the case. Okay, morality.
Alteration.
What's that?
Genetic alteration,
absolutely. Yeah, playing God, yeah. Morality is declining. Here's some news on that from the Epoch Times. Texas Supreme Court rules against abortion providers, effectively ends the challenge to the state's abortion ban. Good. Epoch Times. Pennsylvania Democrats celebrate Abortion Provider Appreciation Day. Yeah. Breitbart. Hawaii lawmakers advance bill to force insurance companies to provide transgender medical treatment. Listen to this. Lawmakers in Hawaii have advanced legislation that will force insurance companies to cover gender-affirming medical treatment for people who claim to be transgender or the opposite of their biological sex. The text of the legislation says it is necessary because people who want to undergo life-altering surgeries and other treatment are discriminated against by insurance companies. The legislature finds that these arbitrary assessments of medical necessity are not evidence-based and interfere with the patient-physician relationship. They also place transgender persons who are denied treatment at higher risk of suicide and depression. Well, I don't think it has anything to do with them not providing the medical care. I think it's because the people are already insane. Hormone therapies, hysterectomies, mastectomies, vocal training, and the list goes on and on and on and on. It's a very long list. Smoking cessation therapies. All of these are included in this transgender bill. Okay, some other news from around the world. We got some disturbing trends to read you from Mail Online. You don't defeat a crazy man with nuclear weapons, with weakness. Navy SEAL who killed bin Laden slams the U.S. response to Putin, the Pentagon, for pushing their climate change plans and says Russia and China are laughing at us. Rob O'Neill was the Navy SEAL who shot the 911 mastermind in 2011 in Pakistan. He left the service after 16 years and 400 combat missions for his country. Decorated veteran says Russians are dying for a leader who's lost his marbles. He also criticized the U.S. and their nonsense ploys and showing weakness. The example he uses is the canceled nuclear missile test last weekend. Also said the Pentagon is wasting resources by trying to turn warships green. He added there's no way the U.S. could take out Putin like bin Laden. Mail Online. John Cleese has his microphone taken away at South by Southwest Festival for saying that Britain should get reparations from Italy and France for Romans and Normans enslaving Britons. He's making a point that actually happened in human history, and he's saying that why shouldn't we get reparations? And they didn't like it, and they took away his microphone. Hey, listen, I have no problem with that type of logic. If somebody can claim reparations here in America, why can't they claim reparations for what happened to them? Why is there a double standard in this? I'm not seeing it. British comedian John Cleese in row with fellow comics over slave reparations. Monty Python icon had been at South by Southwest public event in Texas. But he landed himself in hot water after joking about France and Italy owing Brits slave reparations for the Roman Empire and the Norman invasion of 1066. His microphone was eventually taken off him by American comic Dulcie Sloan. I have no problem at all with what he said. Zero. We've got a descendant of slaves right here in this church right now. And he's not black. Why shouldn't he be getting reparations? And I tell people, if they ever try to pass this and say, we're going to pay reparations, I'm going to get at the front of the line. Because I've said this before, my great-great-great-grandfather, Thomas Cresson Garrett, was the last stop on the Underground Railroad. The very last stop. Harriet Tubman stayed at his house many, many times, and he gave up his entire fortune for the cause. Why shouldn't he get reparations or his descendants? Times of Israel. There's a Holocaust going on, says Chuck Schumer, urging assistance for Ukraine. Times of Israel. Ukrainian officials tell Hebrew media Putin's war is like the Holocaust. And they're told that many in Israel are uncomfortable with comparing the Holocaust to Ukraine events. But a Jew in the U.S. Congress just did it. And now somebody that's not a Jew says it and they say, you can't say that. I am personally completely tired of hearing about the Holocaust. It's a one-sided argument against the world, and it doesn't matter if you make a comparison to the Holocaust with the shots that came out last year, okay? And people made that, and they said, this is like what happened to them. We might as well put on a yellow star. Everybody freaked out, except there's the Jewish woman that came out who was in the Holocaust, and she said that this is exactly what's happening there. And they won't let her speak, but they'll let the other ones that say that this isn't. I'm personally tired of it. I'm tired of the Holocaust issue. It's just thrown into the face of the world and it's used indiscriminately by people to make their case, but not allow anybody else to make their own case. Okay, from the Epic Times. After George Floyd protests, a dramatic nationwide decline in proactive policing. That is a Holocaust of stupidity right there. Minneapolis, the number of officer-initiated stops dropped a whopping 80%. In June 2020. Since then, it went down 80%. Since then, the number of officer-initiated stops has been on a largely downward trend. So they're probably down to 5% or something. In contrast, the number of citizen-initiated stops remained relatively steady during the same period. In Seattle, where a high-profile autonomous zone was set up following the Floyd incident, the number of Terry stops dropped by 60% in June 2020. The latest number for February 2022 stands at 274, which is less than half of the lowest point of 4 years prior to the protests. That is a Holocaust of stupidity. Epic Times. DC officers' suicide after January 6th Capitol breach designated as line of duty death. Unbelievable. The guy should never have been a cop if he had to kill himself after whatever happened to him. Okay, they didn't do the right check. He killed himself. Now he's getting a line of duty death while people that didn't do anything have been in prison for over a year now. Epic Times, Garland, January 6th probe won't end until everyone who committed crimes is held accountable. Well, it's time to indict the U.S. government then. That's what needs to happen. Zero Hedge, idiocy. CDC lowers expectations for child development, raising new questions for parents. They lowered the expectations because we can't meet them anymore, because they've got little faces hiding behind masks and they can't build up any confidence. And so they're just out there walking around like little zombies. So we're just going to lower the expectations. Zero Hedge. Only 18% of Americans say their wages are keeping pace with soaring inflation. 18%. That means, what's that? 72% are not. Bongino. Inflation soared 7.9% in February with no end in sight, and it's been going up in March as well. Mail Online, outrage as career criminal, 54, on murder charge for beating a 67-year-old man to death on New York City street is freed without bail. From the New York Post, New York City woman, 68, was beaten and raped inside a Catholic church by a homeless man who has at least 30 prior arrests dating back to the 1980s before being saved by a hero priest. My guess is in a week we're going to hear that that priest got arrested for violating this person's rights or something. Mail online. Georgia high school coach is suspended after he restrained an aggressive female student armed with a loaded gun after she threw a stapler at his head. She's got a loaded gun. She throws a stapler at his head. He restrains her, and now he is in trouble. We got some better trends here, though. From the Epoch Times, Alabama Governor Kay Ivey signs bill to eliminate permit requirement for carrying pistols. Mail online. Georgia House passes constitutional carry law that would abolish requirement for a background check or permit to carry a handgun. I got a friend. Eric, where are you? We need you to get this going in Florida, okay? He's a lawyer up there in the north of Florida, and he gets into this kind of stuff. I'm hoping he will be able to get this introduced here, too, because I'm tired of carrying around another card. You know, your wallet gets really fat because you got all these different cards. You got to have one for this. I got one for concealed carry. I'd love to throw that thing away and then just be able to carry it on my hip. Okay. All right. Next one. Ohio Governor DeWine signs bill to eliminate permit mandate for concealed carry. Good job. Okay. This is a good trend that's in the United States, at least in the conservative states. Okay. Let's see here. Mail online. Horrifying video shows DUI suspect die after screaming, "I can't breathe," 11 times as he was pinned face down by LAPD for refusing to give blood sample over fear of needles 2 months before George Floyd's death. But it doesn't matter because he's white. Let's just burn down the whole nation over something that happens all the time. Nobody cares about it unless they can make an agenda out of it. Who said it? Never forget, a government big enough to give us everything we want is a government big enough to take from us everything we have. No. We're getting close. Gerald Ford. Yeah. Okay. Got a lesser cure for you. There will soon be mosquito abort when the boy and girl insects consort, engineered in their play by the E, P, and A, there will be more of death, less cavort. All right, I got a bit of irony here for you today. First one, mail online. TV journalist in L.A. is seen reporting on a deadly car crash while another car crash takes place live on air right behind him. It was good. You can watch it online. And then from Newsmax. This isn't so much irony, it's just Trump being Trump. Trump, Russia sanctions on Biden may reveal conflict of interest. Such is the world in which we live. So from Sarasota, Florida to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, I'm Charlie Garrett, and that is your CG report for the week.